Now here in our next part of the program, I've got Brent Black. He's USU's Extension Fruit Specialist, and we'll take your questions or comments. The toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. You can also send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. Or you can post to the Utah Public Radio Facebook page, and we'll look for your questions or comments there. Brent, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me back.
Do you know what? There's so much that's going on in my garden right now with brambles, but just, what was it, a week and a half ago, or was it last week? You had some a field day in the Kaysville area.
Right. On the 13th, we had a field day for commercial, primarily focused at commercial fruit and vegetable growers.
So what did you find out from this field day?
Well, this was kind of to showcase some of the research that's been going on. There were topics that were covered on berry crops, on tree fruits, and of course on vegetables that Dan Drost was co-organizing the field day. So we had one of the things that we featured on the berry crops was kind of a second generation variety trial that we've been doing on raspberries. So we had a series of variety trials that we did, summer raspberries, fall raspberries, and then a fairly extensive blackberry trial that kind of wound down over the last 2 years, and when we moved in with a kind of a next generation one. So that was one of the featured stops to look at some of the new varieties that were starting to see how well they're adapted to the Wasatch Front.
Now, in my own garden, I'm always trying to try some new varieties to see how well they do. For me, the number one thing is flavor. You know, if it doesn't taste really good, why do I want to have it? So like one of those, then we were discussing for the program, for some people, they like it. For me, I'm like, oh, this stuff's really bland. But it produces a ton, and that's royalty. And you said mm-hmm. that's a cross between a black raspberry and a regular raspberry?
A red raspberry, yes, that's okay. Correct. So it has the idea there was that you could get some of the flavor characteristics of the black raspberry, which is very unique, and get some of the growth characteristics of a red raspberry kind of more manageable. The black raspberries tend to be a little bit unruly in their growth habit. They're
tell
much
me
more
about
thorny.
It.
You're finding that out.
I planted Jewel, which uh-huh. is a black raspberry, and I do like the flavor better than the royalty, and it produced a ton, but does it like to ramble around?
Yeah, you kind of have to treat them a little bit like a semi-erect blackberry and kind of pinch them back and try and keep them in their space because they can be unruly. And they're a lot more thorny than what we typically think of as a raspberry. The other thing that I think that a benefit of the hybrids is fruit size. The black caps or black raspberries tend to be pretty small.
It was a little small.
And you get the hybrid and you get a lot bigger berry, so you can fill your bucket a lot faster.
So is the royalty the only option when it
so
comes
no,
to the
there's,
hybrid?
So no, there's another one that's quite popular called Brandywine. We included royalty in our variety trial. It doesn't have the most exciting flavor to eat fresh off the plant. It makes a wonderful jam or preserve. It's really, because it has some of those unique flavors, and it yields very well. The fruit are large, and it's quite cold hardy. We've not seen really any winter injury in the 5 years that we grew it or 6 years that we had it in the trial.
And that's another huge issue for here in Utah. Most of these varieties are developed on the West Coast mm-hmm. in very much warmer winter climates.
Kind of coastal maritime type climate. And so they don't get the winter test that we get. And another thing that is kind of at our disadvantage is a lot of the prevalent theory on winter survival of berries is that they're a little different than a fruit tree, in that with a fruit tree, it's really just the temperature that affects survival of the shoots and the buds. And with raspberries and blackberries, it can be desiccation or drying out. So winter dry, low humidity winds in the winter are just as damaging as how cold it actually gets. And so we have that in spades in Utah. We've got dry, cold winter air that exacerbates the problem a little bit.
So when you're looking at putting in blackberries or black raspberries, some of these that are a little more marginal, Do you put them on the side of your of a building where they're a little bit protected from these winds?
So that can help some. So if you've got a winter windbreak, that will affect that will help. And then also the other part of the protection issue is just a lot of what gets us is the temperature fluctuations. And so if you've got them where they have winter shade, particularly in the afternoon, so that they're not warming up a lot on a sunny day, and then having the temperature drop so dramatically as the sun goes down, that that will help as well.
Okay, so the fact that I've got the royalty and I've had them for the last 5 years and I've had nary a problem with them, that just kind of confirms your research in my own garden that I am that able to grow royalty.
Yeah, it's very cold tolerant.
And so how does Brandywine taste?
So it tastes better. We've not put it in our trials, and so I don't know how well it'd take the winters, or really how well it yields in our climate. We had to kind of limit the selection. We ended up with 25 different varieties.
And there's only how many to choose from?
Yeah, exactly. And about 20 different blackberries, and so we were kind of limited for space, and so we had to kind of pick and choose what we included.
Well, in this past blend from fall into winter was pretty severe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a kind of a mild fall and then it got cold very quickly. So we actually saw a lot of damage in our blackberries this last year, and kind of we were thinking about continuing the trial into this summer, and then we had so much winter injury that we decided to end the trial a little bit early just because it was so widespread. And a lot of that I think had to do with it going from fairly mild through October, November until it got very cold very quickly. And plants need time to acclimate. They need cold temperatures to harden off and to prepare themselves for even colder temperatures. And when you get these really dramatic temperature drops, they just don't have time to harden off appropriately.
Now, humans can adjust a little bit better, but I'm still thinking of friends of mine who were in Arizona and they moved up here.
Uh-huh.
And that first winter,
yeah,
they just about killed them. I'm like, this is actually a pretty good winter. So,
yeah.
And then by the next one, they were okay with it.
They're used to it, right?
Yeah. We have a first question. It's from Kathy, and she says, my grapevine was growing great for 3 years, and last year the leaves turned yellow and grew to about 1.5 inches in diameter. This year is much worse, and we are getting no grapes at all. There are some full-sized leaves at the base of the stem, but as the stem has grown, the leaves haven't. I have the grape planted next to the horse corral, if that makes a difference. We have also had a problem with chlorosis in this part of the yard. I have given this grape iron combined with Epsom salts, but have seen no changes this month. What can I do to get grapes again?
So the question is, what's the form of iron that you've put on? If once they get that far behind, it's really hard for a plant to catch up on iron. And that's exactly what it sounds like. If they've seen chlorosis in that part of their yard, and the last two seasons we've had probably more chlorosis than we've had in the past for whatever reason, it depends on the form of the iron. You can get a really strong boost if you use the iron chelate. If you just use the ironite or one of those iron sulfate formulations, you're not going to see really anything in terms of a response. If you want a rapid response, what we typically do is take an iron chelate solution, put it on as a soil drench, and put it on as a foliar application.
Mm.
So a soil drench will move that iron to the new growth, the emerging shoots, and a foliar application will treat the existing leaves. You kind of have to do both if you want to affect the whole plant.
Now, would it have instructions on the container about how to do that,
mm-hmm,
so you don't burn the plant?
Yeah, it's very expensive, so you're not going to buy enough to burn the plant typically. It's not a salt that's going to burn, but usually it'll have instructions, and you mix up a solution, and like I say, both the foliar and the soil drench works very well.
Now, if you just put it on the soil but don't drench it in, it's going to take several weeks for
it to get
in there.
You want to mix it up as a solution and then pour it so it gets down into the roots right away. And the response is fairly rapid. You'll see an effect within maybe 10 days to 2 weeks. You'll really see that have an effect. And this late in the season, you probably want to do both, but you're not going to solve the problem with one application. You may want to go in, treat everything now, and then again early in the spring, next year.
So if that's not the issue, is there anything else that's common?
Other issues that might be causing that, based on the descriptions she has there. Number one, if it's in an area where you oftentimes see iron chlorosis, often that is associated with heavier soils. We see more chlorosis in susceptible species where we don't get, where we have a heavy clay soil. And so sometimes associated with that is a poor drainage, particularly in the spring. We'll see iron chlorosis where in cool, wet soils that are slow to dry out in the spring, the roots are waterlogged or whatever and have a hard time getting iron. So there may be a drainage issue there. If it's close to a horse corral where there's a lot of manure, there may be some salt issues as well. Mm. It just depends on how close and if they're getting leaching of salts from the manure into the root zone where the grape is.
So raised beds
Going to help a lot. And if you've got a salt problem, raised beds and then a fairly several heavy irrigations to kind of leach those salts or flush those salts out of that soil profile.
So now she's been putting some Epsom salts on there, which is magnesium. Is that going to exacerbate any issues?
It's not going to do anything for iron chlorosis.
Yeah. Will it help the plant at all? How does the plant use magnesium?
So where we have deficiencies, it can have an effect, but it's not going to do anything. And if that doesn't sound like a magnesium deficiency, which is not really particularly common for our area.
So the magnesium doesn't do anything to help change the pH at all.
It's not enough to have an effect in our soils typically. Now, I don't know what her soil conditions are. I'm just guessing here at some of these things, but probably not enough to have a major effect.
So if you got some sulfur, and I've seen at Weeks Berry Farm when they're, because they grow blueberries there, mm-hmm. the soil is yellow because they add so much sulfur in there. And it's fairly inexpensive. Would it do me any good to take and put a lot of sulfur in my bramble beds?
So again, that depends on your soil. So if you have a really,
so mine's heavy clay.
Yeah. And it also depends on whether or not your soil's calcareous. So if you have a calcareous soil, so it has the parent material is limestone, then whenever you add acid, you dissolve part of the soil particles, and that's the extent of your effect. So if you have limestone-based soil, a calcareous soil, and usually those are characterized by pHs in the mid-8 range, yeah. You can pour a barrel of sulfuric acid onto your soil, and it'll fizz for a few days, and then the pH is the same because all you did with the acid is dissolve soil particles. Now, that's in the case of Weeks where they're growing the blueberries, they don't have that high of a pH, and they've got more, they don't have a lot of that calcareous characteristic, and so they can acidify. But it's the heavier the clay soil, the harder it is to acidify. So it's a lot easier to do in a sandy soil than it is in a clay soil where there's just a lot more buffering capacity there.
So for where I am on the west side of Hyde Park, down on the lower end, down in almost to the valley floor, it's not going to hurt anything, but it's not going to help anything either.
Much. What it will do is what Weeks are doing and some of the other commercial growers do is they have they have a sulfur burner, which they use to create sulfurous acid, which they then inject into their irrigation system along with nutrients. And what that will do is it keeps the nutrients available a little bit better than if they weren't doing that. So they're treating their water as they irrigate, and that can have a benefit. Even if it's not acidifying the bulk soil, it's making those nutrients that they're putting into they're injecting more available to the plant.
I'm not going to be doing that. I've seen how they do it, and it's like, wow, that's a lot of work.
It is. It is.
Well, you're listening to The Zesty Garden. My guest is Brent Black, and he's in for about the next 15 minutes. If you'd like to join our conversation, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. And we're talking about fruits, whether it be grapes or strawberries or, in this case, brambles. 1-800-826-1495. You can send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. or you can go to the Utah Public Radio Facebook page and post a comment there. 1-800-826-1495 is the toll-free number. So getting back to looking at these trials that you did, let's talk about the different the tasting that went on. Now, each person is going to be a little bit different because I've got Caroline. I think Caroline raspberries are some of the best tasting raspberries I've ever had. My wife agrees and my kids agree. My father agrees. My mother, however, thinks they're the most sour tasting berries she's ever had. I'm like, how can you think that? So that being said, overall general, though, you get enough people voting for one or another.
So that that becomes challenging because one of the we run into several snags when we try and evaluate or quantify flavor preference. So flavor preference, what constitute flavor? There's a number of things. One is the sweetness or the sugar content. The other is the acid, which is the sour part that you detect. And then there's some other aromatic compounds that add kind of the complexity to the flavor. The two overriding things are the sweetness and the tartness, or the sugar and the acid, basically.
So I'm guessing that blackberries have more acid than the raspberries?
Well, it depends. So that's
okay, that, again, that on the varieties?
Brings,
okay.
Well, and ripeness. So that's the other factor that becomes a challenge. When we do these taste tests, ripeness has a big effect on eating quality. And one of the things that I run into as I talk to particularly home gardeners that try their hand at growing blackberries, usually the first complaint I hear is they say, well, I don't like them because they're so sour.
Well, they pick them too early.
Because they pick them too early. Exactly. So
they look ripe. They're black.
Right.
But unless you know to look for when that glossy sheen goes to a dull sheen.
Or just test them to see how easily they separate from the plant. A ripe blackberry will come off pretty easy, and one that doesn't, you'll have to pull off pretty hard. So that, you know, the acid, in the case of blackberries, the development of the sugars and the reduction in the acids comes pretty late. And so the fruit colors up nicely and it looks great, but it's just not ripe yet. And the acid content's still high and it's really sour if you pick it. So that comes into play as well. And some people like really sweet with no acid, and some people like lots of acid with a little bit of sugar, and preferences run the gamut. So we've done a couple of different things to try and test what people like and what they don't like. And sometimes it varies over the course of the season, depending on whether you're picking those first primary berries or later on. But one of the things we've done is to get panels and then have them score different attributes of each fruit. Another thing that's been kind of fun to do, and our county agents in Davis County have been heavily involved in this, is they have a farmer's market there at the Utah Botanical Center on Thursdays, and they'll take whatever fruit is ripe that week and put it out on unlabeled containers. And then as people come by, they ask them if they want to participate, and they'll hand them 10 pennies.
That'd be coming every week.
and there's a bank behind each sample of fruit. And then they can go along and taste everything, and they can vote with the pennies they're given. And they can place all 10 pennies in one bank, or they can spread them out as they see fit. And so we've done that over the different trials that we've done. And that's been really interesting because sometimes so one week it'll be heavily skewed one way, and another week it'll be skewed another way. But it's been an interesting way for us to kind of at least get some feedback on what people like.
Okay, I've got to ask the question, are there any varieties that overall tend to get more pennies than others?
So it's interesting if you look over the course of the trial. We've had, so in the case of the raspberries, we've had a few Pacific Northwest varieties that have scored very, very well in taste tests. And oftentimes those are the ones that aren't winter hardy. So some years we don't have any fruit to even trial, and other years we do. Same with the blackberries. We've had in years where we've had some of the trailing blackberries, the ones that are common to the Pacific Northwest, those score very, very well in taste tests when they're available. But, you know, 1 year out of four, we get fruit and the rest of the time they freeze back. So things like Marionberry, and some of those have done very well in our taste tests when we have them, but they're just too intermittent for So you're talking earlier, your number one criteria is flavor, but a commercial grower wants to make money, and yeah, if there's no fruit, they can't make money. So they're looking at yield as well as consumer acceptance.
So for me, being able to have them one out of every 4 years, while preferably not acceptable, could be acceptable if I get a whole lot that 1 year.
Well,
and
there's
freeze them.
There's other things you can do. I mean, we've experimented with different things like high tunnels and row covers and things like that. Some of these trailing blackberries, and this is being done more commercially in other parts of the country, we've struggled to get it to work out in the field, but it could be suitable for home garden, is because the trailing blackberries are so prized because of the size and flavor, and because they're trailing, the vines are quite limber. You can actually lay them down and mulch them over the course of the winter, and then in the spring stand them up and get the fruit. And that's something that a home gardener could do that is a little bit challenging to do on a commercial scale, and we've struggled to see that work particularly well.
Well, we're talking about brambles, and Brent Black is USU's Extension Fruit Specialist. We're going to take a quick break and then come back and finish our discussion. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 1-800-826-1495, or you can send us your email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com, or go to the Utah Public Radio Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this part of the Zesty Garden. In our gardening calendar, the Friends of the Logan Library features a course today on herbs for nutrition. It's from noon to 1 o'clock. Learn what they are and how to use them by Josh and Amy Choate of Logan. Information is at facebook.com/Logan Library Friends. The Tahnaquit Nature Center in St. George is hosting Fall into Vegetable Gardening. It's Saturday the 23rd from 10 to 11. One of the benefits of living in Southern Utah is the long growing season, and you can learn how to make the climate work for you and your vegetables. All workshops are free and open to the public. The Tahnaquit Nature Center is at 1851 South Dixie Drive. The USU Botanical Center in Kaysville is hosting a seed-saving workshop on September 4th from 4 to 6 p.m. Learn how to save seeds from your favorite vegetables and flowers in this two-hour class. Participants will get to collect seeds to take home. Information is at ogdenbotanicalcenter.org. And then the Escalante Farmers Market takes place Saturdays from 9 to noon through September. The market is at West Main and South Center Street in Escalante. My guest for the rest of for about 10 more minutes is Brent Black, USU Extension Fruit Specialist. And Brent, I'm going to ask you now, those pennies can, over a period of time, probably have certain varieties that come to the surface and seem to pull better anyway, P-O-L-L. So tell me, to start with raspberries.
So with the summer raspberries, we have, one of the ones that we included is Tulamine, and you've asked me about Tulamine in the past. It's kind of considered the flavor standard for red raspberry. It's very popular, and it's one of the Pacific Northwest varieties that we found out doesn't do very well here. So it's kind of hit and miss. But interestingly enough, when we did some of the flavor or consumer preference panels, we had a few of the Cascade series that scored quite high with it, Cascade Delight and Cascade Bounty. And they have done quite well. Cascade Delight has done pretty well here. That's kind of become one of our internal standards for our next round of trials, because it's the winter survival wasn't fantastic, but it was certainly better than Canby. And Canby's kind of been the old standard, and it can be scored quite high in flavor preferences, but it was still in the bottom third in terms of winter survival. And so our yields were a little bit inconsistent with it.
Now, I do have the Cascade Delight, so I'm in a colder zone than where these trials are taking place, and I can say I've not had any issues.
Well,
yeah, it's done really well.
Good.
I still like the Canby. It's hard to give it up, and I can always tell where my Canbys are. Even though I pulled them all out, all of a sudden after 2 years, I've noticed over by the side of the house, here's some raspberries coming up, and it's doesn't have a lot of thorns on it.
It's smoother.
And I thought, how did that get there? I never planted it, but there it is, and I'm letting it go. So, and then there's a couple in the garden that just popped up. So I'm like, okay, I don't really want these, but I'm going to let them go because I like the taste so well. So that's summer raspberries.
So of the summer raspberries, those have done those have done well. And interestingly enough, of all of the summer raspberries that we had, royalties scored second to last. So you'll notice that.
Why am I not surprised
that they don't disagree with you on the on the on their preferences? With the I'm looking at the wrong thing. With the fall raspberries, the one that scored consistently highest was Anne, which is the yellow fruited one, and I think you've tried that and you can confirm. That
I
that's
do.
A good
I
one.
Really like the flavor. It doesn't seem to be. I'm having some issues with cold hardiness, with it being
too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just tends as to it's be, getting hitting its stride, it's
all of a sudden it's like, no, I haven't
season.
Had these yet.
Right. So. Right. Yeah, and that's a problem. With the fall bears, the ones that we had, it yield the amount of fruit you get is all we now. Let me clarify this. With our fall bears, we only collect a fall crop. We don't try and double crop them. So after the harvest in the winter, we mow them right to the ground. So we only get the primocane crop.
Right after the harvest?
Well, after they've gone dormant, the leaves have dropped.
Yeah,
we just mow them to the ground before the next season. So,
and that's what I end up doing.
Right,
I don't do both.
And I should clarify, if you leave them alone, you'll get a floricane crop on those canes, on the lower part of the cane in the summer. So you'll get a summer crop and a fall crop. And we don't do that. We just cut them
back.
They
just seem to do better.
You'll get more in the fall if you don't if you don't try and double crop them. And for those, so Anne did very well. Polka was number two. And that yields pretty well. It's an earlier one. In fact, of all of the fall bears that we had in that first trial, it is the earliest. And so it comes on early. You get pretty good yields year after year after year because it's coming on so early. It'll usually run its course before you get a fall freeze.
And I've got Polka in mind. I've not had any issues as far as cold hardiness or whatever, and it seems to be doing pretty well too.
And so that one was good. Joan Jay is a newer variety that it was quite productive.
Like Joan Jett and the Blackhearts?
Yeah, only is just the Jay.
Yeah.
And that's done pretty well. It scored in the top third with as far as flavor preference, and it was the highest yielder next to the Polka. So it's a little bit later than Polka. It's similar season to Caroline, and the preference was quite good.
Dude, that's really helpful for when you've got colder areas and you could get a heavy frost by the end of September. You've got to look for something that's going to come on
that's
a little bit
come
earlier.
Come on and go. So we another one that is early like that that we didn't have in the first trial that we're trying now is Palana, which is another fairly early one, and that the people seem to like that berry as well.
So curious, since everyone that I know seems to grow Heritage, where did Heritage show up in these?
So it was as far as yield, it was near the bottom. As far as fruit size, it was near the bottom. But as far as flavor preference, it was up there with Polka and Joan Jay. It was in the top third. But it's just the berries are small and so yields are poor because it's late.
So Caroline, where does Caroline fit in? I haven't heard Caroline. I'm like, what?
So Caroline was in the top third in terms of yield, and it came out dead last in the flavor.
You're kidding me.
I think a lot of our panelists didn't like the higher acid, the sour, more sour
see,
fruit.
To me, again, it's just personal preference, but my whole family, they have the best raspberry. What I would say, I'm looking for a raspberry flavor.
Yeah.
That it's just phenomenal. Yeah. And I love how productive mine are. And these berries, they're humongous. They're like the size of my thumb.
Size is good. Size is really good on them. One of the issues
I'll just keep growing Carolines.
Well, what I was going to ask you, how long have you had your Carolines?
They've been in probably 7 years, 8 years.
So one of the complaints I've heard, and we don't have any data to show this, is that the Carolines to kind of run out of steam earlier in the planting. So after 7 or 8 years, the planting.
They just start dying out.
Yeah, they lose their vigor and so forth. And so I'll be curious to see how yours turn out.
Well, I didn't weed too well this year, but the ones on each end that get more water seem to be doing okay.
A lot
the
better.
Ones in the middle, I can't quite tell because I haven't gone through and weeded everything out. But, dang. Well, that's not good to hear. So I'll keep track of that and let you know exactly what happens over the next couple of years.
Okay.
Okay, so looking at black raspberries, were those?
We didn't do any black raspberry trials. We did blackberry trials, and so really, this was no surprise. The winter survival and yield of blackberries had a lot to do with the type that they were. So there's three different blackberry types that we grow. There's semi-erect, erect, and trailing. And I listed them in order of adaptability to Utah. The semi-erect are the most cold hardy. And so because all but a handful of blackberries are summer bearers, if you don't get survival of the canes, you don't get fruit. And so we saw that the semi-erect types were the highest yielding of all the types. And of those, the best in terms of yield and in terms of winter survival and in terms of flavor preference was Triple Crown.
Interesting.
Chester was a close second in terms of winter survival, but the flavor on it was quite – it was rated fairly low.
So in my colder zone up here where it's kind of iffy even with Chester – I'm going to plant a new variety, so maybe I should try Triple Crown because I'm going to plant them on the east side of my barn rather than the west side.
I have Triple Crown growing in my backyard, and the fruit, we're just getting the first ripe fruit now. And it showed a lot of – it did not look good after this last winter. The initial leaves that came out were yellow. The vines or the canes were weak, and it's come back, and it's producing quite well. So I can recommend that one. I really – that's kind of the one that I think works the best for us.
And you're also here in Cache Valley. So
right.
That's good. And what kind of soil do you have?
Our soil's a little bit heavy, so we have to put iron chelate on. We'll see chlorosis. And we did put some iron chelate on our on the Triple Crowns.
Do you lay the canes
no,
down
I don't.
In the winter?
Okay. So these are the semi-erect types. A lot of times the canes are fairly stiff, so you're going to have a hard time getting them to lay down without a lot of extra manipulation to keep them so that you could lay them down. And
okay.
we don't go to that.
So we have
extreme.
60 seconds. What else do you have left?
Well, the trailing types that people really like for flavor, we found a new one that hadn't been named until after the trial was over called Newberry. It's in that classification of the trailing types like Marion, and that's the most cold hardy. It doesn't yield nearly like the Triple Crown do, but if you had a place where you could lay it down, the trailing types have really big fruit. They're early, and the flavor's really nice. It's just you see a lot of winter injury.
So how much winter injury with Newberry?
Well, if they're left out to their own devices and uncovered, you're seeing maybe 50, 60% die back in a typical year. But
okay. But
with a little bit of protection in a backyard, you could do a lot better than that.
And a great website to go to, because we didn't even get to talk about some of the native berries like serviceberry and chokecherries. It's fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Just one, fruit.usu.edu.
Correct.
For information on pretty much anything you'd like to know about growing fruits in the state of Utah. Brent, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Zesty Garden. Brent Black is USU's Extension Fruit Specialist, and we'll have him back in again. Coming up next is Helen Cannon and Petals and Prose.
Programming on Utah Public Radio is made possible in part by our members and Write It Up, hosting the Sunset on the Square season finale in St. George, Friday, August 22nd at 6 p.m., featuring The Movie Blind Side at Sunset, along with games, dancing, and food.